Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist. I'm your host, Taylor, and today we are back with part two of our three-part series of highlighting youth activists who attended COP27. Currently, I'm at COP15, so, you know, there is some delays with posting these because I've been very busy organizing for COP15. I had my own event, which was pretty awesome, but I don't want to take too much time right now. So we have three amazing activists that are going to be on this episode, and they are Maria Sara Olivella, Finir Ricard Anderson, and Angela Zong. I'm so excited to share with all of you their amazing experiences at COP27 and what they took away from COP27 and what they learned and what they shared with us, because I think it's not only important just to go to COP27 to learn for oneself, but also to disseminate that information to people who weren't able to get there and to really see behind the scenes of what happened at COP27. So our first guest speaker for this episode is Maria Sara Olivella. Maria is a student at Blanquerna Universita Ramon Llull pursuing a degree in international relations. She is the co-founder of Fridays for Future Barcelona and is organized with ReEarth.org, Societa Nova Geographica, and Oxfam Intermon. She is an experienced media spokesperson, having appeared on the main Spanish media like Time Out Barcelona, El Periódico, El Nacional, FAQ TV3, and Catalunya Radio. Likewise, she is now a key actor in conversations around climate change, both in Spain and in Europe. Maria attended COP25 as a Spanish youth delegate and a media and press organizer for Friday for Future. After a year off due to health issues, Maria returned to activism by creating and working on different tools to help the youth mobilize. One of them is a course on activism with over 300 students and 40 professors to introduce young people to activism. Another key tool for activism is social media, and Maria is now a key member of CUR's team, a new social media made with ethics and social change in mind. Trying to revolutionize social media in order to create social change is the main objective of the platform, as well as taking care of our democracy and young people. She has recently been recognized as a European Climate Pact Ambassador. So I'd love to welcome Maria Sara Olivella. So hi, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. It's exciting.
Yeah, I'm so excited to hear what you have to say about COP. So can you please describe your experience at COP27 as a youth activist?
Absolutely. I think COPs are at most an absolute intense place. Like if you had to describe COP in a word, it's probably intense. It's very intense in a good and bad way. I think there's a lot of good happening. You meet a lot of people that you haven't met in ages, that like you've been working with for a long time, but you haven't met. There's a lot of networking going on. People mostly go at the COP to network, actually. So there's a lot of good things happening. You meet a lot of people doing amazing things. So there's a lot of hope building in that way. But there's also so much tension. Like I remember last week when there was like everything happening with the EU and the policies, there's so much tension. There's like a feeling of heaviness in the air that I describe as like very, very intense. So it's always very intense. I would say that my experience, this COP has been a bit worse than like maybe other COPs. It's like other COPs were a bit more fun, I believe, because of the context. Like they were not in Egypt. They were like in places where you could just go for beers afterwards, or like there was maybe in like the youth sphere a bit more of like fun. This COP was definitely way more serious to me. It was way more to the point. There was more worries and expectations. We definitely felt less safe. I as a person felt way less safe. There was a sense of being watched and vigiled, and like actually like kind of like in a creepy way, like, like taxis had the cameras, you felt like you couldn't like maybe download things, like you were in the cops' Wi-Fi and you didn't feel safe. That has never happened to me before. So like there was a lot of adjusting to that, I think. But it's from my privilege just adjusting to a regime that it's not as democratic as I'm used to, which is totally a privileged thing to say, but there is a lot of adjusting that comes with it. In terms of work, it was a good cop, I think, for many youth. There was a lot of networking to do. We were given a space at COP. It was the first time in history that youth has its own pavilion, which is good because like it meant that we had somewhere to go. It meant we had like a home base. It's like I remember previous COPs were just organizing on the floor, which is nice. I mean, it was kind of like a youth thing. We were like, yeah, we just like throwing in the floor, organizing. But it's nice that we had a place. But I think also it took away from us being everywhere. It just kind of like enclosed us in a point. Like, I think to a degree, the intention of having this in a pavilion maybe was to just like, just have them there and like speak their things there. And then they don't like annoy anyone because they're like more enclosed. So yeah, it was an interesting job. I think there's a lot that like still needs to be processed and discussed, and then we will see a lot of like how and like how it implies into other things and like what actually comes out of COP in the next following months.
Yeah, and I read about something that this app that people were scared to download because they could access your information or something like that, or your location.
Oh
And
yeah, that was a thing. That was actually like, so there was this app that it was supposed to have all the maps to get around in COP. Thing is, the second or third day, The Guardian came up with an article saying that the app actually like had a spy mechanism in the background and that you couldn't download it because if not, they had a way to access your phone. Many people had downloaded it and freaked out. I fortunately didn't download it. I was just not responsible enough to do it, which is a good thing though. But it was, I remember like it was the second or third day, so it was like very like unsettling, like just from the beginning to just hear that the ad that was supposed to like be maps of the place was bad. It was like okay, that's where we are. But it was very funny because like the entire place was a huge maze. Like you could not find anything. It was very, very big. It was like from one point to the final point of COP, it was almost a kilometer. You would walk so much every day. And there was no actual like plans or indications anywhere. So I think a lot of us got, I feel like I wasted so much time just getting around, which is so annoying.
yeah, I heard that from other people as well. And that's like really sad to me because it kind of is making it inaccessible for youth. And like you said, having us in like people in a pavilion somewhere separate, which is great to have a pavilion to be able to voice your voice, but where are you gonna like how are you gonna be in the negotiation rooms and how are you gonna be close to everybody who's doing those negotiations, right? So I totally hear what you're saying with that. That's so annoying, but at least you had a place this year and not on the floor. So,
And it had a coffee machine, so youth were happy.
yeah, okay. Always the coffee machine. That's what
Oh, yeah.
you can't be anywhere without a. I cannot be anywhere without a coffee machine. So I.
So yeah, I would honestly purposely go to the youth pavilion just for coffee, like every few hours.
I bet you met a lot of people and networked there because of that. So it worked out. So was there a lot of greenwashing at COP27?
I feel there's always a lot of greenwashing at any COP. Inside COP itself, I think the like biggest sponsors that you could find was probably Coca-Cola, which just sponsored the whole thing, which was funny because like it stopped sponsoring it like in the middle of the second week or something, because it received a lot of backlash for it. And then like all of a sudden they were giving Coca-Colas away. Like it was so funny. Like they didn't like, I guess they just didn't make a profit out of them anymore, so they were just giving them away. You could just grab a Coca-Cola. It was so weird, which you had been paying for the like later, like the early weeks. So it was weird. Then there was Vodafone who was giving us all SIM cards, which I found so like unsettling because like the Wi-Fi didn't work inside COP for a long time. Like when all the leaders were there, the Wi-Fi didn't work, which was such a like frenetic and like very stressful time because like so much of the work we do depends on the internet. So like I was inside there, I was like, I'm here, but I can't do anything. And it was super, super, super like stressful. But yeah, like all the data that we had to make phone calls and everything came from SIM cards that were given to us by COP itself, which I found very creepy because like if they're giving us like apps that spy on us, like why would they not give like, you know, but you had no really other options. So like we just took it, I guess. I think the biggest, it's not even greenwashing, it's just lowering the biggest like data that like shock it doesn't even shock me anymore, but at the same time the fact that it's so bad, it did shock me. Like the fact that there were 600 lobbyists from the fossil fuel industry, and like I thought like COP26 was bad, but why did it keeps getting worse? Like it's very sad because like we have all these campaigns of like keep polluters out, and they seem very that it works, like they seem very vigilant, and the public opinion is very on it, but every time they just increase. Like there's a 25% increase since COP26. And already in COP26, they were like bigger than any delegation. Like they were bigger than Brazil, which is the biggest delegation they were. So like they're bigger than any government. They're just there existing like between us. So it's definitely something. I was not inside negotiation rooms, although I was in the hallways and you could see the like faces and stuff, which I found super interesting. But I've been told that there was a lot of lobbying inside the rooms.
And I mean, I think personally, the reason why they're bringing more fossil fuel lobbyists is because they're intimidated, and they want they're like, oh,
I
yeah,
hope
like
so.
that's what
They
I think.
should.
I think like they were like, oh, great, people are like actually starting to believe in climate change. Like we should bring more
Yeah.
people there and make sure they don't believe in it.
Actually, I really strongly like believe and like me and other people that like it was done in Egypt, like the COP itself was done in Egypt in such a like also like such a like excluded place, like it's Sharm el-Sheikh. So like social society couldn't be in it because they were scared that like there was more society than ever. And they're scared of that because like the more society there is, there's more accountability, there's more pushing, there is in general more ambition, and they're scared of it. So they just did a COP in Sharm el-Sheikh. But I'm very glad that there was society there. Not sure how we all got there, honestly, still a miracle to me. But there was a society there. There was a lot of youth, more than I expected. So I think that like even in the worst case scenario, which is you know like Egypt, next year Dubai, society finds a way there, which is very nice.
Yeah, and I think even though COPs are so inaccessible, I think there was, and especially being in Egypt, I think a lot of youth still were able to get there, which is amazing in my opinion. And everyone, I'm pretty sure, got back safely. So I'm happy
A
that,
miracle, honestly. Like, honestly,
yeah.
when I got home, I was like, miracle, you're alive and
Yeah.
good.
That's, I was like the whole time here, I'm like watching, I'm like listening to the news, and I'm like, please, like, let everyone be okay. Like everyone getting home safely. Like the only thing I heard was like someone lost their computer or got their computer damaged. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. We can live with that.
That's absolutely fine. Yeah, chill.
We can live with that.
No, it could have been way worse. I was with a delegation of 20 youth, and I was expecting like way more drama to go down, honestly. It went like for the circumstances and like where we were and everything, it was way better than like so much could have gone wrong, and it didn't. So I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, it's I was like for especially for like LGBT youth, like I was very nervous for that, but I mean it seems like everything was fine. I mean from what I've seen, so I can't.
Yeah, I feel like there was a lot of, so it felt like as long as you were accredited as like COP, they respected you. I have a little story that I went outside, like I went to a dinner and left my accreditation home because it was a dinner, it was not COP, so I didn't need it. And when I tried to go back to the hotel by myself, they thought I was a prostitute because I was a young woman alone. So like I'm pretty sure I almost got into sex trafficking, but thankfully, my director, who's David Villasenor, saved my ass very, very gladly and came to pick me up. But I think.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Like, as long as you have, were wearing an accreditation and a badge that like said that you were UN, you were untouchable. Like, so that's nice.
Well, I'm sorry you experienced that. That's awful.
Yeah, no, it was like there was this woman who were like, yeah, I think because you're a young woman. And I was like, okay. But I've heard like history, like my roommate was there too, and she's also explained things of like, yeah, we were alone and like taxi drivers like not listening to them and like trying to like drive them another way around or like things, creepy things like that. But I'm very thankful like nothing actually happened, at least to people I know. So
Yeah, well, I'm very grateful for that as well. That's absolutely terrifying. So what is a key takeaway from COP27 that gives you hope?
you know, there's been a lot of backlash from the conclusions of COP27, which happens every year because, like, when you're outside of it and you see what these people have come up for 2 weeks, you look at it and you're just like, that's bullshit. Which is fair and a total, like, okay scientific outcome of it. But I feel like when you're there and you see all the drama that goes inside, the tension, the tears, the blood, because like, like you could see the negotiators like struggling. The last 2 days, those people had not slept in good knows, like who knows. And they were like all so worried. You could see the worriness in their face, and they're actually humans who are trying. And I think there's, to me, something there. Like, to me as a person, to know that they're actually humans trying to do something inside of the rooms, and I've seen them, I've seen that they actually care, some of them, and there's people in there that care. I think it's been a good takeaway for me. Also, I know like people are like, oh yeah, it's a small win, but it is a win. Like, we have a loss and damage fund, and that is huge. Like, we struggled to put loss and damage in the agenda. The fact that they actually approved it, it's a win. It's a huge win. And like, I think as an activist, we have this type of behavior. We don't actually celebrate anything. We just criticize things, which it is our job. But I think it is very important for us to acknowledge our wins and the fact that we got 200 countries almost to agree that there is a need and agree on a fund and a mechanism for it. Even if it's not like absolutely specified by now, it is a public statement that they acknowledge that there needs to be a sense of morality and like depth to these countries that was not acknowledged since now. So I think it's very important. That gives me a bit of hope. And I think, like, as many others probably have told you, just being there and being with youth and being with people that are doing amazing things. Because like what happens at COP is that there's a lot of negotiations going on, but there's also 30,000 people there who work at your field and are doing the same things as you are doing, but like in very different ways. And just learning from people that are doing good things and that like are trying and have amazing projects in mind is very inspiring. So yeah, I would say the people and the small loss, like small wins are the best. So
Yeah, it's so true. And I think as activists, like you said, we don't always celebrate those wins, and that's how we get burnt out. And I think for me,
exactly.
yeah, like if I'm just sitting there doom scrolling all day and like only thinking about like the bad things that are happening, I'm burnt out and I almost like can't act because I'm just so tired. And I'm like, what do I do? There's so much to like do. And it's like learning that you can put something down and you can still be okay with your win because we will be back and ready tomorrow, but take your win today.
Exactly. Like, celebrate today and like complain tomorrow. But I think there's a very important part of activism works. And in order for us to say that, we do need to acknowledge when it does, because I feel like we don't. And activism has worked, and many of the youth movement has brought incredible change to the world. There's incredible change in acknowledgement, there's incredible change in padding, and a lot of that has helped to further ambition things like loss and damage. And take the win, please take the win. Complain tomorrow that the fund is not enough, that there is no specific mechanisms. That will be in Dubai. Worry about that tomorrow. We will complain about that in Dubai, but please take the win for once. And complain tomorrow. I think that's the biggest say I would say.
Yeah, and there's so many activists as well. So especially the people who were at COP and you guys were there being able to listen to those negotiations and protest and raise your voices. And from home I was watching, but it obviously wasn't the same tension that you guys were feeling and the same emotions. It was very different emotions, and that's okay, right? But being home, I didn't have to be as stressed out as everyone there, so I can pick up on some things that you guys need to rest. And like you said before, you still need to process everything that happened. A lot of people were telling me what they need, they needed to process everything that happened in that 2 weeks because it was a lot to process. So, I think it's also a great being able to build community with other youth so other people can do things while other people are resting. So.
Absolutely. I'm actually very, very grateful that I was able to meet my delegation there, because I'm now with the delegation of 20 youth, which is the Global Youth Leadership Council. And I haven't met them before, because we've worked together for a year, for almost 6 months, and I have never met them. And just to be there with them, living, and it has formed such a team that I've now been very hopeful that we can do amazing things together just by the team building that was in COP.
I love that. I heard that too from someone else, and I'm like, oh, I love that. Because I work remotely too, so I don't get to see all the other activists I work with. So, living vicariously through you, I love that.
It will come to you, I promise. Just give it time. Working online does suck a bit, but you'll see it's worth it at the end.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on and discussing everything that you have talked about. And is there anything else that you want to say before we end?
Dubai might be a shit show, but we're ready for it. I mean, there's been this talk all over COP of are we actually going to Dubai? And everyone looks at you and is like, maybe not. So I guess just we'll see next year. But I think we need to mentally prepare a lot for Dubai. So I'll start doing that now.
Mentally preparing now. Okay, that's
Mentally prepare for Dubai, yeah.
I'm preparing right now. So, thank you so
You should
much.
come. I think it's you.
I know, I really hope I can come. I'm actually going to COP 15, so we'll see. We'll see if I can be able to do COP 28. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Oh, so many COPs. So thank you again so much for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
So that wraps up our first guest speaker that we highlighted on this episode, and we are going to be moving on to our second youth activist who attended COP27. Our next youth activist is Finnur Rakar Andersen, who is a 20-year-old Icelandic climate activist currently studying global sustainability science at Utrecht University in the Netherlands. He has been active in the youth climate movement for over 3 years and has, in that time, taken on several leadership roles in various groups and organizations, as well as carried out research on nature conservation and ecosystem restoration. Currently, he is a board member of the Icelandic Youth Environmental Association and the chair of their climate committee. He is also the Icelandic UN Youth Delegate on Climate Change, and as such, he attended COP26 and COP27 as part of the Icelandic national delegation. So, with that, I'd love to welcome Finnur to our podcast.
So hi, thank you so much for joining the podcast today.
Hi, nice to see you.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to hear about your COP27 experience. So do you mind just describing your experience at COP27 and being a youth activist? What was that like?
Yeah, so I had the pleasure to be the Icelandic United Nations Youth Delegate in the Icelandic delegation. So I probably had a more formal role than a lot of other youth activists at COP27. And I also had this role at COP26 last year. So I was there in a in a bit more of a formal capacity where I was inside my country's delegation. So I had a different type of information access than other people. So I was quite aware of what was happening in the negotiations at all the points throughout the 2 weeks, which was super valuable. Actually, I was able to get a much rounder and fuller picture of what was going on and what I thought of how things were currently standing. So in that regard, I was quite privileged, and I tried to share that knowledge and inside information as much as I could without, crossing any boundaries with other youth activists around me. So I was joined at the conference by 3 other people from my association, actually. So it was really nice to also have their support and feeling that, yeah, not only them but also other youth activists that I knew and then got to know were really supportive. And I think that's one of the really great things about the youth activist movement is that we're really supportive of each other. So that's something I definitely felt. Also having the youth and the children and youth pavilion for the first time was really helpful in my opinion, just to have that one space for us who generally don't have a dedicated area for ourselves to either relax or come and connect and share our ideas and opinions and build movements. So that was also a really powerful aspect of my experience as a youth activist at COP27. But then, of course, my influence was quite limited, I feel. I spoke with my delegation as much as I could, tried to gather as much intel as I could to make my opinion as valid as possible. But then my delegation is also there with a mandate from my government, and I have very little power to influence my government in any very decisive way. So as much as it is nice to see more youth involvement at these COPs year after year, and the fact that the language is being included in the final decisions on the importance of youth inclusion and inclusion of other non-state actors, our real decision-making capacity is still quite low. So that's something that I think is important for us to keep in mind, both as youth activists, as we gain a bigger platform to express our opinions, not to forget about the fact that having a platform to speak is still different from having the power to influence decisions. And that's where we really need to get to. So yeah, it was nice to speak to my delegation. There was also some Icelandic and Nordic politicians who were there. And I got to speak to one of my ministers quite a lot. Had some, yeah, both some casual conversations, but also more formal meetings. And there actually was a rare occurrence where I really felt that she was listening to me. She was taking in my ideas, seeing where I was coming from, agreeing with some of my opinions, and saying that she would, take decisive action to voice my opinions to other people that she worked with in the government. So in that regard, that was something I felt was really, really nice to finally feel that I was really being heard and that my opinions and views are being taken forward to the people that need to hear them the most. So I think that would probably be my highlight in terms of my experience as a youth activist at COP27.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I'm glad that you got that experience to be listened to and have your ideas like validated, which is awesome feeling. So since you went to COP26 as well, do you feel like since there was a youth pavilion this year and not one on COP in COP26, did you feel like any difference between that and like that this one was more inclusive?
I'm not sure if the fact that a children and youth pavilion was present this year and compared to last year made any difference in terms of the inclusivity of it. It definitely gave us a better platform to express ourselves in terms of, getting our ideas out to other young people and either even other people who are there in different capacities than as youth activists. So that was really nice. But what I do think happened in the case of quite a lot of people is that it was difficult to get a visa, it was difficult to get a hotel, difficult to get funding to travel, or funding for anything else for that matter. So as usual, the capacity for young activists was very limited compared to other people who come in more formal capacities or have stronger financial ground to stand on. So in terms of inclusivity, I think it was unfortunately, still quite limited when it comes to young people. And I think Generally, just from judging from the people I met and the people I listened to, there were perhaps a few more this year than last year, and the representation from different areas of the world might have been slightly better, but still the people from Europe and North America, I think they had an easier time accessing the space, both in terms of their funding and also.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Getting there and the people that supported them in getting there. So there's still a long way to go when it comes to increasing the representation of youth activists at these COPs. But yeah, as with most things at these COPs, it's slowly improving. So that's maybe what I can say on that. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, and 100%. I feel like it's always the more richer countries that are able to get their people there and get more inclusivity there and representation. And yeah, that definitely needs to improve. But thank you for bringing that up. So, did you feel there was a lot of greenwashing at COP27?
Oh, that's a very good question. I didn't see a lot of explicit greenwashing. Maybe that's just because I was closer to the negotiations themselves than some of the pavilions and the side event areas where there may have been maybe more greenwashing. But I did definitely experience some quite harsh bending of the truth by several actors. And of course, I'm guessing other people have also raised this point already, but the fact that a big multinational like Coca-Cola was a big sponsor of the event. Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that approach, giving such a big company with a questionable environmental track record, this platform, or the even the you know just accreditation or credit for being the sponsor of such an important global event on such an important topic. So that's definitely one area that I would, you know, question for next time and say that you could give the platform to another sponsor that is doing a lot better when it comes to climate change and other environmental issues. But yeah, I didn't see a lot of explicit greenwashing, which is a positive point. But I also think that companies and institutions are becoming better at hiding their greenwashing and bending the truth a bit rather than straight out lying. So I guess that can also be a form of greenwashing. And then there's, if I just bring it to my personal experience and what I saw actually, because I was following the negotiations a lot more than the pavilions, as I said, then there are quite some countries that do play around with their narrative in a dodgy way where they explain their stance based on certain facts that you know may not be the actual reason why they have a certain opinion or stance in the negotiations. So I think there's various types of greenwashing that we have to look out for, various ways of yeah, I think it's moving away from lying about what countries or companies are doing and more towards bending the truth, as I mentioned. So I think not a lot of explicit things, but there, if I would have been looking out for it, especially, then I would have probably caught quite a lot more, I think.
Yeah, and when you bring up like certain countries saying things, I just think of like the United States because I'm here, and I think about how like President Biden just went to COP for like a day or two, I heard, and he literally just basically talked about our new like infrastructure bill and was like, yeah, it's doing so much, but like didn't actually like do any negotiating or talking about like what he plans to do. So I don't know, that's just crazy that he's gonna go all the way there for nothing. But yeah, that's just one example. So thank
Yeah.
you for bringing that up.
I think maybe also on that point, I think it's important to recognize that these conferences are a political sphere. And as much as they wanted to brand this COP as the implementation COP, the real implementations happen in the local communities on the ground, back in the countries after the conferences and between them. And it's maybe not the role of world leaders to be negotiating per se or announcing any super concrete local initiatives or actions, but more to advance the global political narrative and the ambition on a global scale. And when it comes to that, I think there are some countries who are doing quite a good job. And also just explaining that, the Inflation Reduction Bill that you mentioned is quite an important one. It's historic for the US, and even though there's a lot of work to be done, it's important to recognize when good progress is made. So I think that aspect of it was nice, despite the fact that, yeah, sometimes countries like the US can bend the truth a bit as well.
Yeah, we're good at that here. So what is a key takeaway from COP27 that gives you hope?
I think generally when I've been speaking to people now that I've come back from the conference, I tend to, for some reason, focus on the negative points or the things that I would have liked for there to be better outcomes on. And I was talking with a friend yesterday, and she was like, "Yeah, I've sort of just stopped following these COPs because I've lost hope that they have any impact at all." And then I had this realization moment where I was like, maybe I need to shift my narrative as well to make sure not to only focus on the negative points or the negative outcomes, but also highlight and maybe, elevate a bit the positive outcomes, because there were quite some positive outcomes despite some key issues not having enough progress. So concretely, I think, of course, what gives me hope is the fact that a 30-year long standoff between developing and developed countries on the loss and damage fund, that standoff has been solved, or at least, it's a start of there not being this massive tension between these traditionally separate groups. So that's something that we definitely should seek hope from, is that the political landscape on the global level can change, and it is changing. Countries in the global north are recognizing their responsibility in a larger capacity. So that's one area of hope. Another area of hope is simply the fact that I hadn't recognized or realized before, but the work that the IPCC is doing and the results that they're producing are being recognized in the reports, in the final agreements of these COPs. There's a lot of explicit mention of the most important scientific findings. So the mention of the importance of keeping warming below 1.5 degrees, and how much worse the impacts would be if we go strive for 2 degrees instead. There's also, for the first time, a mention of the cryosphere, so the frozen areas of our planet, whether that be glaciers or permafrost or any other frozen areas. And linked to the cryosphere mentioned in the text, there's also a mention of tipping points. And I think that's a key moment, a key tipping point in itself, actually, is having this concept finally be recognized by the global community, because yeah, it's a real threat, and having that finally mentioned and recognized as a threat is something that gives me hope that it could be taken more seriously. And I think more generally, moving away from the concrete decision, the text decisions, I think just walking through the hallways of this conference and seeing, what was it, 30 to 40,000 people who are almost all of them committed to solving the problem of climate change and other environmental problems, even if we have different ways of going about it and we may disagree on some fundamental aspects of how to get there. It is quite inspiring to be in that space with so many people who in the end have, yeah, qu quite a similar target to make a better world and prevent the catastrophe that we're currently heading for. So that's something I tried to take. Yeah, I tried to gain hope from that fact as well, that there is so many people out there with so many cool initiatives that I will never even know about. So just it's quite comforting, actually, to know that there's a lot of things going on out there that we're not aware of, and we can, yeah, if we're in need of comfort, that's something that we can think about. There's so many other people out there doing great things that there is still hope.
Yeah, I think it can be sometimes very isolating when you're in your own little bubble. And then when we go out and we get to see all these people and see everyone who's actually doing the work and actually cares about doing the work, that must feel, I mean, I haven't been in that in the COP spaces yet. So I think that's awesome that you get to experience that and all the people there get to experience that like feeling of not being alone, because it can be so isolating, I think. And it's true, like we have to start somewhere. Like you mentioned, it can feel like, oh, what really happened? But a lot did happen, and a lot is happening, a lot of good is happening. And even the small wins, we have to start somewhere. And I know some people will say, well, it's not enough. And yeah, it will never probably be enough for now, but we have to start somewhere. And getting the loss and damage fund started, and even talking about it and discussing it when it wasn't even on the agenda originally, is a huge win. So thank you for bringing that up, and how, we need to be hopeful in these small wins as well.
And I think also, even if there are some topics like the mitigation topic, which is all about reducing emissions and addressing the cause of climate change, even if we didn't achieve enough progress on that front, and far from it, what I do see as a positive point from that sort of failure, I'm going to call it, is the fact that there are so many countries who are still committed to a lot of emission reductions, who are still committed to higher mitigation ambition. We see the EU, some other countries in the Western world, but also, countries like the small island states, who are going to be impacted the worst, or among the countries that are going to be impacted the worst, that, despite there not being a global agreement on the need for increased ambition when it comes to reducing emissions, there are quite a lot of countries around the world that are still committed to this increased ambition, regardless of what the rest of the world says. So, even if we need big emitters to step up their game a bit, I think there's still some hope to be gained also from the fact that other countries are committed and are willing to go further than what the final agreement states. And I think that's also something that we need to recognize, is that this is only one venue for achieving progress on the climate crisis, or on tackling the climate crisis, and that we need to take these decisions and implement them concretely when we come back home, but also go further. There's nothing that says that we can't do more than what these agreements say in the end. So that's something that I think is important to recognize and lift up in the narrative, and when we as activists speak to the general public, but also decision makers.
Yeah, and I love that you bring that up, because local communities are doing, I think, way more than global communities in general. And just like how like Biden talked about, these federal laws and bills and stuff like that, but he doesn't talk about, in my own state in New York, how we have amazing environmental bills and legislation being passed and discussed. So that's happening everywhere. And we don't see that at the global conferences like COP. So I know that's happening everywhere. So it's really, again, great to bring up that local communities and countries and small countries are doing the work. And we kind of need to step up the game with the global country, like with bigger countries, but we'll get there. We're getting there.
And maybe one also that I forgot to mention, one thing that gives me hope, and it's the fact that these agreements aren't binding in any way. People aren't, or countries aren't, forced to do what says in there, even though they're strongly encouraged, and even if there's a lot of political pressure from other countries for them to implement what they agreed upon. But a new addition and a sort of paradigm shift that came through in this year's decision is that multilateral development banks are encouraged to reform the way they structure their operations, and the way that they give out money to certain projects in order to channel their finance into more climate-related initiatives and projects. And even if it's not binding for these banks to do so, the agreement does send a very strong political message to these entities, and it's very likely that they will take this message home to their heart and actually implement some of the change that they're asked to implement. So that's also something that gives me hope, is the fact that we're moving beyond the traditional, it's all on countries to solve this crisis, or on individuals, and moving to other non-state actors such as private companies and multilateral development banks, who I do think will play and will have to play a major role. So that's also something that gives me hope, is the fact that we're recognizing and broadening our scope as to who we involve and who we empower to take action on this topic.
Wow, I did not hear about that. So I will definitely have to do some research on that. That's awesome. And yeah, like we need more private sector and more just companies in general to kind of have the pressure put on them as well. Because I know there's the, what is it, the carbon footprint calculator, and it's supposed to make like us feel bad as individuals when it's like we're just feeding into what they want us to do. So yeah, I'm glad that that was also brought up. You're bringing up great points. So yeah, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I think generally what I try to do is have a balance between the urgency and the empowerment of people when I speak to them. It is important to recognize that we're in a very urgent state in our world. We're on a very dangerous path when it comes to climate change. We're not doing enough currently. The nationally determined contributions or the goals of each country's are not enough to get us where we need to get. And there are some real dangerous impacts that will come if we don't act soon. And by soon, I mean very.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Very soon. So that's the urgency part of it. But then also, acknowledging that we do have the possibility to, prevent all these or most of these catastrophic outcomes. And we have to recognize that there are so many opportunities, so many benefits to taking the drastic action that needs to be taken. And these words, urgent, drastic, transformational, they sound negative or scary to some people. But actually, what lies behind them are endless possibilities and positive outcomes that are totally unrelated to climate change. It's more economical for us to take action sooner. It's cheaper. We literally save money. We increase people's health or prevent, a lot of negative health side effects of, for example, burning fossil fuels. We manage to increase the access to clean electricity to people all around the world. We can also couple this with bringing people out of poverty. There are so many positive outcomes that come along with taking drastic climate action, that drastic may not even be the right word, but fast and active and inclusive action. It's urgent that we do take action because the consequences are very serious. But it's also, there are a lot of opportunities for us to engage with when taking these actions.
Yeah, thank you for leaving us with that. That was very well put. And that's kind of like all that I try to preach in my podcast is hope. So thank you again so much for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And that wraps up my episode with Veneur. And we are moving on to our final activist on this episode. Don't forget that we will have two more activists come onto the podcast next week. So stay tuned for that. It might be a little later in the week, like this week was later in the week because I had COP15. But it will be later in the week next week because I do have finals and I can't wait to be done with them. So I will get it out as soon as I can. So the next youth activist is Angela Zong. Angela is a first-generation Asian-American Harvard sophomore. She's studying economics with a secondary in environmental science, public policy, and a citation in Mandarin. Hailing from Houston, Angela has felt the impacts of natural disasters and climate change firsthand. Though she's currently on a gap year, she previously served as her school's first-ever Minister for Climate and Sustainability on the Undergraduate Council Executive Cabinet. Angela is passionate about youth climate advocacy and was fortunate enough to represent youth at the U.S. Institute of Peace Conference, Rotary World Peace Conference, ECOSOC Youth Conference, EarthX 2022, Stockholm 50, C40 City Summit, and many more. She currently serves as an intern for the UN Capital Development Fund and enjoys figure skating in her free time. If you want to learn more about Angela, you can check the description of the podcast, and I have her website linked there. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest speaker, Angela.
Okay, so hi, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to hear about your experience at COP. So do you mind describing your experience at COP27 as a youth activist?
Yeah, for sure. I think going into COP, there's a lot of uncertainty about like whether we should even go this year, what sort of safety precautions look like. But we went, and I think it was pretty smooth, fortunately for us. I know for other people, like there was a lot of visa problems, and so that's definitely something to work on for next year. But I would say, in terms of like actions, it's a lot harder this year than in previous years to have some sort of demonstration. You just have to get it approved ahead of time. And so I think that was the biggest question mark going in. But thankfully, we were still able to have some approved actions on like Palestine, loss and damage, and things like that.
Perfect. That's awesome. So, did you enjoy your experience there? And
Yeah, for sure. I think, okay, so there's the blue zone and the green zone. In the blue zone, I think going in this year, I knew it was going to be overwhelming, so that like mentally prepared me in some ways. And so I think I had a better experience because like going in, I knew like, okay, this is going to be like a huge ride. Like, how do I break it down? And so like better than last year in that sense. The green zone was interesting. It was like almost like a Lollapalooza like music festival crossed with like Las Vegas moment. Like, it was a lot of like corporate sponsorships, a lot of Instagrammable like photo spots, and like random, I don't know, it was just like very synthetic. Like, you could tell they had just built it for COP. And I think it's important to have a green zone, but this year, like, I feel like people who weren't involved in COP, like, it would have been harder for them to go dress to the green zone anyway. So that one is going to be a no for me this year, but I think there were a lot of like space constraints, so they did the best that they could with what they had.
So from that type of experience in the green zone, it's funny that it's called the green zone, but did you feel there was a lot of greenwashing in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the response to like the Coca-Cola sponsorship was like sort of indicative going in of what this was going to look like. And then I also heard this year that they had the most like fossil fuel lobbyists with different delegations. So that I wasn't a fan of that. I think that intrinsically creates greenwashing because the incentives of like negotiators and party leads and stuff are now skewed because of the presence of these people and like in such a large presence. In terms of like actions, like I do think the negotiators are working like as diligently as possible to like represent their country, and like it's great that there's a loss and damage fund now, but a lot of questions still just keep getting pushed off, and so I'm a little bit frustrated about that, to be honest, but like that is sort of the narrative of COP going in, right? Like, institutional change is slow and incremental, like blah blah blah. So I don't think that like it was a surprise to anyone, for sure.
Yeah, I've heard very similar things. It's no surprise that some, obviously, a lot of things are going to go slowly, but we need more fast change. And I think that will happen more at local levels. But, that's the whole point of going to COP, and the whole point of COP is to speed up change. But, anywho.
Anyway.
So, what is a key takeaway from COP27 that gives you hope, or just any key takeaways?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one is the people that I was with this time exposed me to a lot of different mindsets about what activism and change and like community building and grassroots and like all these terms, like what does that actually look like? Because like I think the international perspective is very skewed by the global north, especially I think with the like a lot of youth are only able or feel that they are only able to make change because of like media presences and having like platforms and opportunities. But I feel like this time, because I was going in with that exposure already, I was able to learn a lot about like what people are doing on the ground and how that can translate to international change. And so I think that was the biggest point for me. Like, even though I'm on a gap semester right now, like I think COP was probably one of the most like intellectually stimulating experiences, just because of the people I was around and like the exposure to different perspectives and narratives was super cool. And so like I think just for that reason alone, like it's worth going to COP at least once and making that type of connection and network, because these are the types of people who you like will be like by your side, like fighting alongside with you for like the next years. And so And then the other takeaway, I think, was about the Children and Youth Pavilion. So a lot of people are super excited that it's the first ever Children and Youth Pavilion. So just like having a space where people are able to like chill and like talk and do some work, get some coffee is just so meaningful because every other like delegation or cohort has some sort of space like that until and except for children and youth until now. And I think the other thing was that the funders of the pavilion, I think CIFF, like CIFF, the Children's Investment Fund Foundation, something like that, they like made sure none of it was like branded. Like it was really focused on children and youth. And so anytime like the negotiators would walk by in order to go to the negotiations, they would pass by the super bustling pavilion, and you could tell there was always like a lot of energy and effort going into it. And so I think that was super meaningful and really put us on the radar in like a substantial like way that we hadn't seen before. So that was super exciting to be part of.
Yeah, I think I've heard very similar things as well, with community building in general. And that's after COP and that's during COP as well. And getting to meet people who are like-minded and from all over the world. And it's just so I'm so jealous and I'm so like I'm living vicariously through all of you through all
Right.
these podcasts. And it's like, but I'm so glad that you guys got that experience because it is so important to know that we aren't alone in these times and in our own thoughts and in the climate crisis in general, we're all here together and we're all fighting for this together. So I really love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there anything else that you want to talk about before we wrap up?
Yeah, I think one interesting element that I recently changed my perspective on is like the role of like mitigation versus adaptation. Because I think a lot of people are drawn to climate change as like an area to work on because of this pull towards like the theoretical future generations, which I totally agree with, but like so like the argument is that like oh like future generations are going to be impacted more and more and children and youth are like the closest proxy we have to these future generations, and so it's especially important for us to be invested in like the future on like what climate action looks like. I totally agree with all of that. I think that that does make a really compelling case for mitigation, but I do think it's sort of disproportionate that like the vast majority of efforts is going towards mitigation because like we like to think a lot about these future generations, but also if the impacts are happening now to like global South countries, I think for the global North to be focused on mitigation is literally to say that they don't care about like the effects that are going on right now in people's livelihoods. And so I think that in the future, like adaptation is definitely a somewhat neglected area. Like I think it's been doing better and better over time, but I would love to see more efforts focused on that. I know there's a couple of youth networks who work on adaptation, so I'm super excited to see what they're up to. But I think overall, that's definitely an area that I want to like personally be more well-versed on, but also hear from like others about what they think, since I don't know, it's just like the global North cannot exist without like the extraction of this global South, like right. And so like to be part of that process as like someone from the US, like I want to like make sure that I want like can do whatever I can to address adaptation.
Yeah, it's so true. And such a great point because honestly, we're talking about mitigation for future generations, but people are being impacted, especially in the global South and frontline communities right now. So saying, oh, we're going to do this for years to come, but it's like people are being impacted now. Climate change is here, the crisis is here, and it's going like not to be like the doomist, but it's going to continue to get worse if we don't start to adapt and mitigate things now and not do that in the future. And we have time now to go back on that. We have time now to stop extracting fossil fuels and stop exploiting and extracting from the global south. So I really am glad that you brought that up.
No, for sure. Yeah. And I don't know, like I think it'll get better and better over time for sure, but it's a question like how much time do we even have for these like sacrifices?
Yeah, definitely. Do you feel like this was brought up a lot at COP27, or was it kind of like, again, pushed to the side?
I think like there was maybe more effort than I had seen previously, but like the bar is so low here that like yeah, you can do it and call it progress, but it's not the sort of change that I think needs to happen for sure.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, it's very true. But is there anything else that you wanted to add?
I think that's it for now, but I'll definitely let you know if something comes to mind later for sure.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
And that wraps up this episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist. I really hope you enjoyed the guest speakers that were on this episode. Again, all of these guest speakers and all these youth activists are really paving the way for the future. And it's an honor to have them on the podcast and hear about their experiences, and not just hear about their experiences at COP27, but to hear about the amazing work that they're doing outside of COP. Because a lot of people think, okay, well, the conference is over, everything's solved. And it's like, no, a lot of the work, and most of the work, not a lot, all of the work happens outside of COP. It's the local communities, it's the individuals who come together to create huge groups that come together to actually make the change. So I'm really appreciative of everyone who listens to their experience, who is listening to their experiences and wants to learn more. And I'm really appreciative, and I know the guest speakers are as well. We'll have one more episode featuring COP27 youth activists, which will be coming out in the next week or so. So make sure to stay tuned for that. And that wraps up this episode of The Hopeful Environmentalist. Always remember to stay hopeful and create positive change.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.